You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
And I'm Susie Hunt.
And we are starting off our month of haunted house movies with episode 113. It's House from 1986. It's an hour and 32 minutes, directed by Steve Miner, who we would know from Friday the 13th 2 and 3, Warlock, Halloween H2O, the Day of the Dead remake, which I'm still a defender of. It's not a good remake of Day of the Dead, but it's a fun zombie movie. And the god-awful Lake Placid that we all agreed on was terrible. But yeah, let's go around the table and see what everyone thinks of this 80s gem. Maurice, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on House?
It's okay. It's not bad. It's not good. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It has a few cool scenes in it, and with Mr. Gordon there.
Yeah.
What's his name? I can't think of his name right now.
Harold Gorton.
Harold Gorton. Yeah, he was he's an interesting character.
I will just refer to as Norm throughout the entire episode.
Yeah, right?
Yep. Norm and Bull.
I really like Big Ben. But yeah, I mean, it's a very campy movie, but I enjoy it. I mean, I'll watch it occasionally. I just saw it, for the first time in a while earlier this year. So I have watched it recently.
It's been a few years for me.
Yeah.
Was this one of those ones you saw as a kid or when you got older?
I'm pretty sure I've seen it as a kid, but you know,
it was on TV a lot in the 80s.
I'm old now, so I don't remember many things from when I was a kid.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
I very well could have seen it as a kid, especially with Big Ben's character.
What'd you think of the two songs that were in this movie? There was like no soundtrack to this film.
Yeah, well, I don't think we're really missing much with the soundtrack, huh?
Yeah, just a couple of spoopy sounds and you know, two disco songs.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all you need, right?
Yeah.
Shut your whore mouths about Linda Ronstadt.
I'm sorry, who?
I'm not mocking. I'm just saying all we had were two songs. Well, with that note, Susie, we'll toss it over to you. What are your thoughts?
I really like this movie. It's campy. Aunt Elizabeth, like in the flashback scenes, she's friggin' hilarious. Like, she's the kind of old bat that I want to be when I get to that age.
B or R?
I'm not that age yet. Wow, you're really you're pushing it tonight, buddy. How many have you had to drink?
Not enough to cover this movie. No, I'm just kidding.
I really like how it mixes like the horror elements, and it's campy and funny, and it also deals with, you know, PTSD, and the 80s is really when PTSD, you know, became a thing, because that's when, you know, the Vietnam vets were actually getting diagnosed with it. And I like how it dealt with that, and, you know, his ultimately, Roger's guilt over what happened when he was there. And then, you know, Jimmy, his son, which every time he yelled Jimmy, I just yelled Jimmy. And Shane kind of half watched it with me, but he had the laptop open and was watching something on the laptop with headphones. But there was one part where he was like, I know, and I'll tell you when we get to that. He's like, Have I seen this before? Because I feel like I've seen this before. I'm like, I'm sure you've watched this at least with me at least a few times. But yeah, I love this movie. I like the I like the music that's in it, the Toltu songs. And I just think it's fun. House 2 is fun as well. I watched both of them recently.
The second floor?
And, yes.
Is it second floor or second story?
Second story.
Yeah. Second story. And I thought that it was on Shudder, but it's on Prime. Mm. But that's all I got to say about that for now.
Well, I'm in agreement. I actually do really like this movie, but I will say, after watching it critically, my love of this movie is purely nostalgia-based. I watched this movie a lot as a kid. Like, this was one of my go-to horror movies, just because there's no time wasted. It's just one weird thing after another throughout the entire film. So I was always entertained by it. There was two moments that scared the shit out of me as a kid. One of which still makes the hairs on my neck stand up. It still freaks me the fuck out. We'll get there. I'll mention that when we get there. But overall, I have a blast with this movie. It's silly. It's dumb. It's just it's a lot of fun. There's no time wasted. Like I said, the few characters that are in it are all entertaining. And the effects. I love the effects. They're that perfect level of 80s cheese where they're not great. Like, that's nothing to write home about, but it's just eerie enough that it works. So I'm all over it. Now, granted, modern fidelity and resolution, some of the seams start to show, particularly on Big Ben. But
Or when somebody gets their head chopped off.
Yeah,
you can tell it's a mask.
Yeah. that too. But yeah, the scene when we first get a close-up of Big Ben's face, you can see, I forget the actor's name, it was like William...
Richard Mull.
No, he's the actor who plays Big Ben. Yeah, Zombie Big Ben is William something. It's because Forsythe? Of the scene. No.
I'm kidding.
He's a good actor. But you can see his mouth inside the zombie mouth. Like, it just, you know, it's a little too high-res nowadays. But overall, I think it's a lot of fun. I did actually watch all four of them. I watched the second one immediately following this one, and I still have a blast with part two. I know a lot of people like part two better. I can't say I like it better, but I like it around the same. I love the villain in part two. I think he's creepy as hell. The friggin' zombie cowboy. Mm-hmm. And I love the baby caterpillar dog thing that's in the second one. It's just adorable. But part three, Mike O'May, I'm going to bring this up for him because we talked a little bit about it. I finally watched it, and I'm not impressed. So, Mike, you and I are going to have to talk about this.
Are they all on Prime?
No, I had to track them all down. The first one's on Prime. The second one is on Tubi, but it's free, you know, so you just have to watch commercials. And then the horror show, which it's part three. It's called The Horror Show, but it's House 3. I found it on YouTube, and it's crap. Like, I really didn't like it. It's basically a mix between Shocker and Nightmare on Elm Street. And then part four, oh my God, part four made absolutely no sense whatsoever. And that was, I want to say, 1992 that one came out. And I'm forgetting the name now, but there was like an evil toxic waste dumper named like Mr. Grossio or something like that. It was like...
Oh, it wasn't just Toxy?
No, but this was like, you are totally a Captain Planet villain. It was... Oh, it was so bad. But the funny thing is, William Catt returns as Roger Cobb, but with no relation to this movie. It's Roger Cobb, not the writer, not married to, like, doesn't have a son. He has a daughter. He's married to a different woman. There's this whole,
so it's like
a different universe.
Yeah. It doesn't make any damn sense whatsoever. And it's really dumb. So I'm finally I'm glad that I finally watched it, because I've been putting off part three and four forever. And I figured, what the hell? I just watched the first one. So let me go through the entire catalog here. And man, after part two, you don't need to go any further.
Was it really dumb, though?
It was really dumb.
Okay.
So, I mean, if, I don't know, for the show, it would be funny because there's a lot to talk about. But I don't think I will ever watch it again unless, for some reason, we end up pulling it on the show. But I don't see that happening. We still have plenty of other things to cover.
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen.
But let's get into the cast. So we have Roger Cobb, played by William Catt, who most people would know from The Greatest American Hero. But he was also in MASH, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, as I said, House 4. Cyborg 3, The Recycler. Murder, She Wrote, Jawbreaker, and Paranormal Movie. Then we have Harold Gorton, played by George Wendt, who obviously we would know him from Cheers.
Norm!
And I love that Cliff is in part two.
Yep. So,
Airplane 2, the sequel. He's in Dreamscape, which we may actually cover on here, because that's another great 80s weird horror movie. Fletch, Gung Ho, The Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt, The Reluctant Vampire. This really disturbing movie called King of Ants. I want to say it's like 2003 or 4 that came out. That's a brutal movie. And then Masters of Horror Family, which is a good one. Then we have Big Ben, played by Richard Mull, who we would know from Night Court. He was also in The Dungeon Master, The Dukes of Hazzard, The A-Team, Highlander, Married with Children, But I'm a Cheerleader, Scary Movie 2, Nightmare Man, and Sleigh Bells. So we may be seeing him again if we ever get Sleigh Bells on here. Then we have Sandy Sinclair, played by Kay Lenz, who we know her from American Graffiti, Magnum P.I., another Murder, She Wrote alum, MacGyver, Death Wish 4, The Crackdown. She did voices for The Tick. She was in ER, NCIS, Bones, and Adventure Time. And then we have the really, really pushy neighbor, in my opinion, Tanya, played by Mary Stavin.
She's a fucking bitch.
Right? Oh, I hated her. She was an Octopussy, A View to a Kill, Caddyshack 2, Howling 5, The Rebirth, and Twin Peaks. So, not a very big cast.
We should have Laura Palmer'd her.
Damn!
She's just such a fucking bitch.
Since she's ready for a fight.
Wait till we get to that part. I got shit to say about her. They're fucking crotch goblin.
I actually have a note in here. I was like, I wonder if Susie's going to call her a real fucking bitch.
Oh, you bet.
But, so for anyone who hasn't seen it, the plot is a troubled writer moves into a haunted house after inheriting it from his aunt, where he slowly unravels the mystery involving his missing son. So we open up with a credit crawl and random photo negative shots of the titular house while spoopy music plays. We get a slow POV pan around the entire house leading up to the front, where we see a delivery boy on a scooter bringing groceries into the house.
He's such a minor character, he doesn't even get a name. He's just grocery boy here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, we'll get there. I have a note on that. But
it might have been good for his career.
This is true. But he knocks on the door and it opens. And I'm like, yeah, that's not ominous at all. And he just lets himself in. He calls out, you know, to Mrs. Hooper, who doesn't answer, but he hears a noise upstairs and goes off to investigate. And he stops at the stairs, and there's like this painting of burning people and a woman getting just poked by random like lines. Just like get poked in the butt. I
thought the art in the house
is that the part
really
where he's
good.
Like sick.
Yeah, he goes,
yeah. Sure.
But he looks around and calls out, Mrs. Hooper, it's me, grocery boy. And I wrote, I have no name. I am Job.
Maybe his name is Grocery Boy.
His parents really hated him. They pigeonholed him into a job. But he follows the noise up to a bedroom and finds old Miss Hooper hanging dead from a noose. So he runs
hanging with Mrs. Hooper.
Pretty much. So he goes running out of the house screaming, hops on his little scooter and drives away. And we get a smash cut to Mrs. Hooper's funeral. And it's just her nephew, Roger, and Mrs. Hooper's neighbors, the Joneses. Mr. Jones tells Roger his aunt wasn't crazy. A little senile, maybe, but not crazy. It wasn't like her to go and do something like that. I mean, she's never killed herself before, so why would she start now?
Mr. Jones and me. tell each other fairy tales, and we talk at my aunt's funeral, and we... He was just an odd bird.
Well, I like how he goes, she wasn't crazy. Now my wife, she's crazy.
Yes.
Pans over to his wife crying. But yeah, I thought this was funny. It wasn't like her to go and do something like that. Like, do you get a hint that someone is going to kill themselves when they're just like an old recluse? Like, it just made no sense. That line was dumb.
Right. Especially because we know that Roger and his family lived with her.
Right. It didn't make any damn sense. I think it was just they wanted to have an excuse to make fun of an old lady.
I like cheese.
Yeah. So we got to a POV shot of creepy as fuck fans at a book signing.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That woman, the very first woman in line, having an O. She's like, oh, oh, oh. She probably went home and stuck the book in her cooch. Like in Needful Things, in the book Needful Things, where she went home and like masturbated with the Elvis bust.
Yep. Yeah, that was disturbing because it was just a smash cut to creepy lady's O face. Yep. And then the next guy was like, to my very good friend Johan. It's like, yeah.
So we just and then the punk rocker.
Yeah, he's like, I like your hair.
Thanks.
So during the signing, we find out that he was married to an actress and they're now divorced. And that his next book is going to be about his experiences in the Vietnam War. And also we find out that he hasn't had a new book in 4 years. So his agent tells him that no one wants to read about the Vietnam War anymore. And if he doesn't have a new book soon, he's going to have to pay back his advance from Doubleday. So Roger's kind of having a hard time. So they kind of allude to something tragic happened to Roger, but we don't know quite what just yet. And then we cut to Roger back at his little sad bachelor pad, where he has a freezer full of TV dinners, just trying to make him look more and more sad. So he boots up his ancient computer, stares at the blank screen, and with nothing more than a title, which says, One Man's Story, A Personal Account of the Vietnam War by Roger Cobb. He gets up, makes a phone call, and we find out that he's calling the FBI, asking to speak with Agent Thatcher. We get the impression from the receptionist that he calls quite a lot, because she's like, he's busy, Mr. Cobb. And he's like, I'll wait. So eventually Thatcher gets on the phone, and Cobb asks him about his son. He tells him they have no new information, and he'll be the first to know when they have some. He also tells him that he got a call from the CIA and to please leave Agent Decker alone. So apparently he's called the CIA. Like, how is he getting these numbers? So, yeah, we find out here that the tragic thing that happened to Roger was that his son is missing. It basically kind of seems like the FBI has all but given up the search. So Roger immediately gets another phone call after he hangs up and turns the stereo up for no reason. Like, he didn't have caller ID. This was 1985. Like, he didn't look at, like, a number. He just was holding the phone and was like, and he quickly turned up the radio. Like, how did you know who was calling you?
Because he knew it was award night.
Okay, good point. I'll take that. I just thought it was weird. But
I mean, he himself is strange and unusual.
This is true. So he answers the phone with the stereo blasting, and it's his ex-wife, Sandy Sinclair. He fakes like he's having a poker game, and the two chat for a bit. I love it how she calls him out. He's like, oh, yeah, the guys are all over. She's like, oh, who's there? He's like, the guys.
How sad is that, though, with his imaginary poker party and imaginary friends?
Yep. It's sad life for Mr. Cobb. But, they end up kind of chatting back and forth for a bit. She tells him that she lost the award, and he lies and tells her he's writing again. She then tells him that she got his message about his aunt, and she's sorry for his loss. He tells her that he went by the house again, and she asks him why he keeps torturing himself. She asks him to hold on while people are trying to take photos of her, and he fakes that he's holding up the poker game, and he gets off the phone. You can tell they both still kind of clearly care about each other, but the loss of their kid, you know, is...
They just couldn't get over it.
Yeah. So now we cut to the subplot of the Vietnam War. So we cut to Roger trying to sleep that night, having a nightmare about what appears to be a jungle. This jungle is going to come into play over and over again. This is the first bit we get. We see a kid playing by a wooden cross grave marker, and a zombified hand bursts up from the ground. Kid screams, and Roger wakes up. So, gets out of bed, starts to pack a bag, and then we cut to Roger at his aunt's house meeting with the realtor, who is a total dick. This guy is... Oh my god, he's such a dick.
He's the load that should have been swallowed.
He really is. So they look around the house, and we find out through them chatting that Roger's mom passed away when he was young, and his aunt actually raised him, so he grew up in this house. Then the realtor kind of shows him how they cleaned up the place and mentions they even fixed the pool. Roger stares at it, and we get a flashback. We see Roger trimming the hedges, and his son is playing in the backyard. Roger turns around, and his son is just gone. He goes looking for him, getting increasingly nervous. Eventually, he sees Jimmy struggling in the pool. Roger runs, jumps in the water, looks around, but Jimmy is just gone. Like, there's no trace of him.
So I was half expecting that asshole realtor to be like, oh, your aunt raised you? Well, where was your father?
I mean, with the way he was, like, grilling him, yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised. But
were you a bastard?
Oh, he's a dick. But we cut back to present day, and they continue to look around. They head into the storage shed, where Roger takes a moment to admire Chekhov's gardening equipment. Mm-hmm. the dumbass realtor is playing with a spear gun and asks Roger about his uncle. He begins telling him what happened, and then he accidentally fires a spear right next to Roger's head and laughs. He just goes, oops, sorry about that. I was like,
fuck
you!
And Roger's eyes get so wide. He's like, whoa!
He almost got impaled.
Yep.
Oh my god. Yeah, at that point I would have kicked the realtor out. But anywho, the realtor talks about how Roger's aunt was a painter, and they look at one of her unfinished pieces of an old woman standing at a closet door that looks like a gateway to another dimension. Also in the painting, we see a bathroom sink, but the medicine cabinet is covered up by a rag. We see a noose and a grandfather clock. All things that will play a role in this movie.
Yep.
So Roger tells him about his aunt and how she thought the house was haunted. We get a flashback to Roger reporting to the cops what happened with his son. They're telling him there's no way his son could have been in the pool. Roger insists on what he saw. We see Roger's aunt creeping up like a creeper. Just look at... She looks eerie, man. She's smiling at everyone like full teeth smile.
But I fucking love her. I loved every minute with Aunt Elizabeth. Yeah. She was, gone too soon.
I think she just pipes up and she's like, it was the house. It was the house that did it.
And then she just like creeps away.
Well, no, because Roger's wife like tells her to shut up and runs, and she goes, touchy.
Yes, that's right.
But Roger tells the realtor that he's not selling, that he's going to stay a while and do some work. So we cut to that night. Roger's trying to write once again, but staring at a blank screen. Gets up, looks around. Hears a noise upstairs and goes to investigate, because of course he does.
Yeah.
Here's a very quiet hello. Like, if I didn't have closed captioning on, I wouldn't have heard it. I was like, wait a second. Was that even audible? So, yeah. But he goes upstairs looking around in all the bedrooms. He opens his aunt's bedroom door and sees his aunt standing there. She tells him to run, saying, it tricked me, Roger. I didn't think it could, but it tricked me. It'll trick you too. Leave while you can. She wraps a noose around her neck, wraps a noose around her neck and jumps from a stool. And Roger goes to
disappears.
Stop her, but, yep. She's like, just disappears. So now we cut to Roger looking at a bottle of Valium and deciding against taking them. He then climbs into his son's old bed and goes to sleep. Yeah, right. It's like, if anyone deserves it, he's had a rough time.
The next morning, he's wearing the fucking ugliest sweater ever.
I'm so glad you said that, because I have a note that's just ugh, the clothes in this movie.
Oh my god.
So for those that haven't seen it, it was like this tan
V-neck.
Yeah.
But like a deep, so if a woman was wearing it, it was like such a deep V-neck, it was like Elvira's dress.
This was like V to the belly button.
Yes, but he doesn't have breasts, so it just like hung. And the 80s were very big on like the pants, like the khakis with the pleats.
Yep.
So it just like hung there, and he didn't have any chest hair, so it just looked like, eh. And here we meet that fucking bitch, Tanya.
Yep. She goes jogging by while he's taking out the trash.
Jogging. Oh, leave Tanya alone.
Oh, stop it. She's as bad as what, what's her fucking
I've
name.
I've seen worse.
I don't know. I was pretty pissed at her. But
she's as bad as Juno.
Oh, you watch your tongue.
Talking about his woman now.
No one's as bad as Juno. I mean, don't talk about Juno.
So he oogles her as she goes into her house, and next door to Roger, we see Norm watering his bushes. Strikes up a conversation where Norm introduces himself as Harold Gorton, but I will continue to call him Norm. Yep. And he goes on to tell him, he's like, it's great to have a new neighbor. Woman who lived here before was nuts. Biggest bitch under the sun. Just a senile old hag, really. Wouldn't be surprised if someone just got fed up and offed her. You know what I mean? He goes, she was my aunt. Without skipping a beat, he goes, heart of gold, though. Just a saint, really. And such a beautiful woman for her age.
That was fucking great.
Yeah. Norm yeah, killed cause that.
Because you're right. Like, without even skipping a beat, he's like, oh, most wonderful woman I've ever met.
He's such a good actor, George Wendt. I love him. But he invites
Roger. Stole that scene, he did.
Indeed, he did. He actually steals every scene he's in.
He really does.
But he invites Roger for dinner, telling him, bring the whole family. Roger tells him he's alone, and Norm goes, that's even better. We can grab some burgers and watch the game.
And you're Roger, an A's fan, right?
Yeah. He's like, I'm a writer. I'm here looking for some solitude. Suddenly, Norm realizes who he is and kind of fanboys all over him, saying, I'm your biggest fan, and pulls out basically a book's worth of loose pages in his back pocket.
A tattered copy, if you will.
There was no binding whatsoever.
None.
It was like, and who carries an entire book in their back pocket?
Norm.
That was like a Stephen King novel, though. Oh my God, I laughed so hard at that. But he has him to sign it. And Roger's like, do you have a pen? And they're like, no. And he's like, you know what? Later. We'll take care of that later. And he tells him that, he's going to get back to that solitude. And heads inside. So later
he's like,
that
nice sweater vest.
You dick. Later that night, Roger's attempting to work yet again. And this is where we actually get to see a little bit about what he's writing. So we cut to soldiers in Vietnam. We see Roger and Bull from Night Court standing among them. This, like, Bull is such a dick because Roger's like, hey, can I have a cigarette? And he's like, oh, all right. And he hands him this little tin. And Roger opens it and there's a fucking snake in there. I'm like, why? Like, just so you could prank someone if they happened to ask you for a cigarette?
But there were also cigarettes in there.
This is true. Maybe he likes his cigarette snake flavored.
Yeah.
But so
I think that the character of Big Ben was just one of those hyper masculine guys that, like, I think that he signed up, like, he went voluntarily. He was not drafted, and he just needed to prove that he had the biggest dick in the army when in fact he just was the biggest dick.
This is true. He was all dick.
Yeah. I mean, he bald head, penis shaped.
Exactly.
Cack and balls.
He's one of them dad cacks and balls. But so the men are going over their plan, and Ben hears something. Suddenly a grenade lands near them. He shouts for everyone to get down and hit the deck. The grenade explodes. We see the men are surrounded by the Viet Cong who are shooting at them. Ben jumps up and begins gunning them down, laughing.
Doesn't he do it one-handed, too?
Not yet. He did the first one, he has both hands on it. But yes, there is a scene where he's got one hand on a freaking M60. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, no, buddy. This ain't G.I. Joe. No, you ain't doing that. But cut to Roger typing away. He stops and's kind of distracted by his television, so he shuts it off. He He then hears giggling nearby and looks at the window where he sees a ghostly image of his son and then uses the remote to turn him off too.
Do you know what the movie is that he watches, that he's watching on TV? It's called Don't Look in the Basement. And it's about a nurse that goes to work in a mental hospital. And you find out that the doctor is actually a mental patient who murdered the real doctor.
Interesting. I've never seen this.
It came in a collection of like, it's called like the Vault of Horror or something.
It's called Don't Look in the Basement?
Yeah, Don't Look in the Basement, because the body of the doctor is in the basement.
I'm going to make a little note of it because I wanted to try to watch a bunch of horror movies this this month, just, you know, because October. And yeah. I haven't seen that one, so I'm going to look for it. But yeah, I was wondering because I meant to look up what he was watching, but I totally spaced on it.
I recognized it immediately when the nurse goes, "What? So and so is really a patient?" I'm like, "Oh my God, that's Don't Look in the Basement."
Now, is it, would you say that it's a good movie, or would you say that it's terrible but fun?
It's fun.
Okay.
Like if I'm remembering correctly, because I haven't seen it in years, there's like this woman who's in there because she's a nymphomaniac.
Okay.
It's from like the early to mid 70s. It's like, it's poor video quality. Like the DVD I have, it looks like the tracking is being adjusted when the opening credits come on.
One of them. Gotcha.
Yeah. But it's a fun watch.
Well, I'll definitely look forward to checking it out. Cause like I said, I need a bunch of stuff to watch while I'm drawing this month. Mm-hmm. And, I've been slowly compiling a list, but I only have like 15 movies on there, so I'm going to add it. But I'll report back after I check it out.
Yes, definitely let me know. And everybody, make sure you watch lots of horror movies in October. And it's also the month when Winona Ryder's powers are at their height.
At her most spoopiest.
Yes. Beetlejuice, Stranger Things.
Oh, man, I really
Edward Scissorhands.
Although that one's less spooky and more depressing,
but still it's pretty goth.
Oh yeah, definitely. But it depresses me every time I watch it.
Yeah,
but anywho, now when he turned off his son's ghostly image, I cracked up.
Yeah,
because he's just like, "Daddy," and he's like, "Click,"
he's like, "Not now, Jimmy."
I was like, "Oh my God, that's freaking hilarious." But so he hears his ghostly son's laugh coming from upstairs and goes off to investigate. And I'm like, I love how this movie just jumps right into the weird shit. And Roger is just kind of unfazed. You know, it's like weird shit keeps happening around him. He's like, "Oh, I guess I'll just go look." It's like, dude, you just saw a ghost of your aunt trying to hang herself. And now you saw a ghost of your kid that you turned off with a remote control. And now you're hearing laughter upstairs and you're like, "I wonder what's upstairs."
Well, he was also raised in that house, so it's probably like old hat to him.
Yeah, maybe. But still, I wouldn't be so quick to investigate.
That's true.
But he goes up to his aunt's bedroom, almost opens the closet door, and stops short saying, "I must be crazy," and just goes. He leaves. Now we cut to him getting ready for bed, brushing his teeth and he's wearing his you know, robe and everything.
Oh my God, that robe is as bad as the fucking sweater.
It really is. He looks at himself in the mirror, stops, and then walks back to the bedroom with purpose. He goes over to the closet door, opens it, and nothing. So he closes the door, hears the grandfather clock chime midnight, for whatever reason decides, "You know what? I'm going to open it again now." Opens it up, and this giant beast comes out and claws the shit out of him. He forces the monster back in the closet and locks the door. And I'm like, how many closets have locks? I don't think I've ever been in a house that had locks on their closets.
The house I grew up in and my parents' house.
No shit.
They were built, I think, in the 40s. In the 40s, I think, though.
Man, I've literally never lived in a house or stayed with any, you know, like in my grandparents' house or aunts and uncles. None of the houses I've ever been around had locks on the closets.
Well, you're missing out.
Apparently. No, I'm not missing out, because if my house had locks on the closets growing up, I would have been locked in them by my siblings. I guarantee you.
That's probably true.
I'm probably better off for not having locks on closets.
Well, you had to have an actual key for each lock.
Oh, fuck that.
Oh, they probably would have conveniently lost them.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely would have had more issues than I already have. but anywho, we cut to the next day and there's a delivery truck arriving with shitloads of camera equipment.
I wrote down and enter $20,000 of video recording equipment.
Right. Man, that advance from Doubleday is really paying off.
Yeah, right. He better really write a good book.
In the bedroom, we see Roger setting up all the cameras from a safe distance, pointed at the closet door. He has a rope to pull the door open and is wearing army gear.
All right, here's my question. Oh, go ahead, Maurice.
I was just going to say, I don't understand why he's dressed up in army gear, but go ahead.
So here's my question. If the door shuts, like with a knobby knob, and can be locked and has a latch, how is it just opening by him pulling a string?
Right. I wondered the same damn thing.
Also,
movie's got a movie.
True. Also, I was very impressed with his, like, parkour skills.
Yes. I have a note here that just says parkour.
Yeah. Very spry for a white guy.
Well, that's the thing. He does a trial run. He yanks the door open, runs from the room screaming, like rolls down the stairs, jumps from the landing to the hallway, and then runs out the front door screaming and slides on his knees. That's like, all right. And I love it, though, because Norm sees him and he's like, hey, Rog, what you doing? While he's walking his dog on Roger's lawn.
I know. Like, what were you doing? Letting your dog poop on your neighbor's lawn? Yep. I bet Aunt Elizabeth hated that dog and hated Norm.
Oh, I'm sure. Which is probably why he's like, biggest bitch under the sun. Wouldn't let my dog shit on her lawn.
Right. I wonder if Norm was like his alter ego.
That's where he goes after he's done being a nosy neighbor?
Yeah. He goes to the bar.
Goes to the old watering hole.
Yeah. Where everybody knows his name. But his name really isn't Norm. It's Harold.
And he just never corrected him.
Yeah.
So now, you know, he's living that he everyone there knows him as Norm, even though his real name's Harold.
Or he's in the witness protection program because of what he saw in the house.
Oh. We're making a much more interesting sequel.
Yes.
But I love it because as Roger goes back inside all sheepishly, Norm just looks up. He's like, writing looks like fun. He pulls his dog off the lawn.
Yep.
So Roger heads back into the bedroom, sets everything up, and is ready to go. He opens the door and nothing. And I wrote, sad Roger is sad.
Yep.
And so we cut to later that night. Roger's walking through the hall drinking a beer, and the clock chimes midnight. And he rushes back up to the bedroom to try again. Right as he's about to pull the rope, Norm shows up and scares the fuck out of him.
Wait, what the hell's Norm? Snack,
right? Who goes to someone's Miller house at midnight?
Mm-hmm.
With Miller High Life and beer.
Yeah,
no, Miller High Chinese. Life and Chinese food.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what. If somebody comes over to my house with Miller High Life at midnight, they're getting the fuck out of my house.
Hey, that's the champagne of beers.
No, I don't think so. maybe dollar store champagne.
I'll drink Miller High Life from time to time.
Ugh.
I can't do it. Not a fan.
Oh, y'all bougie. Living in the falls.
We're sitting here drinking our Oktoberfest. We're not drinking Miller High Life.
I'm drinking water.
But yeah, I love the double scream because Norm just like, hey, Rog, what you doing? And Roger screams. And then Norm, like not knowing what to do, also screams. I love the reaction. It's hilarious. But he's like, don't do that. He's like, what'd I do? And he, you know, basically tells him he brought over a midnight snack. And he goes, solitude's always better with someone else around, am I right?
No, you're not right. Solitude is by yourself.
Oh, man. So he goes, what's all the camera equipment for? And Roger suggests they go to the dining room and eat, and he'll tell them all about it. So now we cut to him telling him his sad life story, you know, about, like, basically lost a kid, got divorced, all that. And I love Norm's reaction, because he's just shoveling Chinese food into his face. And he goes, life's a bitch, huh?
Then he goes, yep.
So what's with all the cameras? Like, no cares about what this man has gone through. Just wants to know about the camera equipment.
No fucks given.
Oh, my God. I love Norm in this. But Roger asks him if he believes in ghosts, and he tells him no. Roger explains that his aunt thought the house was haunted, and Norm tells him, he's like, no offense, but your aunt was Looney Tunes. He goes, what about me? Do you think I'm Looney Tunes? He goes, no. You've been to Vietnam, you lost your only son, your wife divorced you, you got a couple of marbles loose, but you seem fine right now. Roger tells him that he thinks the house is haunted, too. And Norm goes, you know, yeah, I find all that unexplainable stuff interesting, too. But they usually find an explanation for it, you know? So Roger plows on telling him about something in the closet, saying that it, you know, it came out and scratched him and all that. And he's like, this is starting to sound like one of your novels. So Roger shows him the scratches on his chest. And Norm goes, you should have someone look at that.
Yep. And they looked like, you would think if a beast scratches you, it would kind of be like in a line.
Yeah.
It almost looked like like someone had frosted him and then took a toothpick to, like, make a design on him.
Yeah, there were, like, five little pokes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was weird. But I love it because he reenacts it. Norm is trying to eat an egg roll. And Roger goes, it reached out and it tried to grab me. And he grabs Norm's hand right as he's about to eat the egg roll. And he keeps trying to take a bite. And yep. Roger's shaking his arm. Oh, my God. So Norm looks nervous and comments on how all the cameras must be to get a picture of the ghost. And Roger goes, yeah, that's right. Norm gets up slowly and tries to leave. He's like, well, I don't want to keep you from it. And Roger asks him again, you know, do you think I'm crazy? He's like, oh, no, not at all. Just getting tired. You know, got to let you get back to your thing. And he starts heading toward the door and telling him.
And he
fucking
steals his phone book.
Yes. Because he's telling him, he's like, fuck. He goes, what's your wife's show called again? I'll make sure to watch it. And he reaches down and grabs the phone book. It's like, oh, you sneaky. But so he gets back to his house and immediately calls Sandy Sinclair. And it's like, what? So now this has to be like 2-3 in the morning at this point.
Yep.
Because, you know, he got there at midnight. They had enough time to sit there and eat and talk.
And drink a 6-pack.
Right. So he explains who he is and how he's worried about Roger. He tells her that she needs to come check on him, but she explains that she has to be on the set at 6:30 in the morning and can't come there, but she'll call to check on him. She gives Norm her daytime number, and he assures her that he'll keep a watch on him.
Only if something bad happens.
He'll
call her only if something bad happens.
Right.
And she's just like, okay.
You woke me up in the middle of the night for this nonsense. But she tries to call Roger, who is writing away and ignores the call. So Roger just doesn't sleep, apparently.
I think he's on speed.
Yeah.
Or cocaine. That was the drug of choice in the 80s.
This is true.
I read a lot of Bret Easton Ellis books.
I think that's how this movie got made, actually. Lots of cocaine.
Probably. Isn't that how Stephen King did Maximum Overdrive?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we cut to the Vietnam story. We see they're discussing their plan, and Ben volunteers to take point, and Roger is forced to go with him. So we see Ben and Roger sneaking through the jungle. Ben is being reckless and mocking Roger for being a chicken. Roger tries to get him to slow down and Ben tells him we got to keep moving. So we pan out to Roger writing. He looks shaken, gets up, and begins to pace. Suddenly, a toy car rolls into the room. He picks it up, looks around, and calls out for Jimmy, but no one is there.
Jimmy!
He then looks over at the swordfish on the wall. Something seems off. He gets up close to it.
That's when Shane was like, haven't I seen this movie before? And I'm like, yes, you have. And he goes, look, it's Billy Bass. And I said, that is not a bass. And I said, we have to think of a classy, sophisticated name. And he goes, Sven.
Sven
the and I said, all right, we'll call him Sven the Swordfish.
I like it. But yeah, it's eye just kind of like looks over at friggin' Roger. And then the whole thing starts flopping around very much like Billy Bass.
Yep. But it isn't singing.
No, it's just going like, meh, making a weird sound.
It should have sang, give me that Filet-O-Fish.
Oh, I want someone to edit that together now.
Who do we know that's good with that kind of stuff?
Oh, man. We're going to put the call out on the webpage.
Yep.
But.
And Roger just looks terrified as it's singing it.
You know, he looks more angry than freaked out. Like, he just begins beating it with one of his uncle's trophies, yelling at it to stop moving.
That's true.
So he heads out to the storage shed, gets a shotgun and a handful of shells, then hears a noise and goes to investigate, and the tools have come to life and they try to attack him. So he runs out of the shed and slams the door. All the tools slam into the door behind him. He goes back inside, trips, and drops two shotgun shells, which it seems like will be important later, but it's pretty anticlimactic. He then goes into the study, shoots the fish, and covers it up with a blanket. Cut to Roger in the bathroom, washing his face, looking frazzled. He goes to take some Valium, and then suddenly there's a loud clattering right behind him. He drops the bottle, spilling all the pills. Grabs a shotgun, opens the bathroom door, and the tools have come for him. They're just floating outside the door.
Those fucking tools are relentless, man.
They really are. And I want to know, like, did they somehow open the doors using the knobs? Because no doors are, like, the back door's not busted open. There's no damage to the bedroom door that was closed. So, like, how did they get in? I'm assuming they would have normally chopped their way through, hence, you know, what they did to the shed door. But they didn't do that to the house doors.
So they have respect for the craftsmanship of the house.
I'm just trying to picture gardening shears opening a knob. You know?
They use the handle part. And one of those sticky things you have in your kitchen, if you have trouble opening a jar, and they have to work together.
Right. So the shovel moves in first to attack him, and Roger just hits it with his gun and it breaks in half. It's like that shovel was weak.
Yep.
He dodges the axe and then runs past them and out the bedroom door and closes it. So he locks them in the bedroom. Now, they can't get out of that door, but they were able to come through the house. So whatever. And this is he goes downstairs and finds Sandy standing in his foyer. She explains she tried to call, but no one answered and she was worried about him.
She's also very, very dressed up.
Yes. And that the low cut. See, she also had a pretty low V on her little purple dress. So.
Yeah, but she's an actress. And I'm just saying, hate her.
I'm just saying that was the style for the movie, apparently. They liked their Vs.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, she looks at him like he's nuts and asks what he's doing with a gun. He tells her, oh, nothing, and sets it down on the table. One of the shells rolls off and falls onto the floor. She bends down out of frame to pick it up and stands back up, and she's one of my childhood nightmares.
A goblin witch.
This chick freaked the fuck out of me as a kid. Like, even though she talks like Alvin the Chipmunk, like, oh my god, she scared the hell out of me. She's like a purple Shrek.
You're not wrong.
I love Roger's reaction, though, because that's pretty much my reaction as a kid. His eyes bulged out and he just screams. But she shrieks and flips the table over, knocking him over. Roger grabs the gun, shoots her twice in the gut, knocking her out of the door. But then when he looks down at her body, it's Sandy once again. Norm wakes up because of the gunfire. Norm wakes up because of the gunfire and sees Roger standing on the porch holding a gun, but the body is blocked by the hedges, so he can't really see there's a corpse on his porch. Norm quickly calls the cops, saying that he'd like to report a suicide attempt. Roger cries over Sandy's body. He hears sirens in the distance and quickly carries her body inside. He then hides her in the cupboard under the stairs, hoping it's not really her, and goes back outside with a rag as the police pull up in front of his house.
So, a shotgun, wouldn't there be a ton of blood splatter?
Uh-huh. I also want to know how the police got there that fucking quick.
Well, it wasn't the movie Scream, so they got there real fast.
I was just going to say, we've seen several movies now where police, it's going to take a little while. You know, and this was like, he had enough time to cry. Like, he was already standing on the porch when Norm called. He cried over Sandy's body and then went to go scoop her up, and he could hear sirens. So, yep. Like, it was, like, less than 10 seconds.
Maybe the police station is right around the corner.
But I love it because he sits down and pretends to be cleaning his gun. He just starts whistling like he didn't just shoot his ex-wife. But the cops pull their guns and force him to move away from his weapon. So he puts his hands over his head, you know, and then they tell him how they've received a complaint about someone firing a shotgun at this address. He explains that he was cleaning the gun and it went off. He didn't know it was loaded. They tell him they'll have to give him a citation, and he's like, oh, thank you.
Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Apparently nothing if you're Roger Cobb.
Exactly.
Because
he
even pointed his shotgun at him at one point. I'm like, he would be dead if this was real. It's like, good God, buddy. You had like five cops with their guns drawn on you and you pointed a shotgun at them.
And the one went on to play what's his face in Jason Goes to Hell, Creighton.
Creighton Duke.
Yep.
Yeah, it took me a minute because I was looking at him going, I know this guy. Where have I seen this guy? And I pulled up IMDb and I'm like, oh, okay, that's where I've seen him. Jason Goes to Hell.
Yep, he had to use the potty.
Yeah, because they recognize him and, you know, they're like, are you Roger Cobb? He tells them, yeah. And he's like, oh, well, why didn't you say so before? And they ignore the citation. And then Creighton Duke asks him if he can use his bathroom. I love it, though, because the way he sets it up, he's like, I forget the name of the book, so we're just going to call it Blood Rage because it was blood something. He's like, are you the same Roger Cobb that wrote Blood Rage? And he's like, oh, I am. And he's like, this may sound a little weird, and I know you're probably busy, but... And Roger's like, oh, yeah, no, do you have a pen? He's like, can I use your bathroom? And Roger's like, no, I mean, yes. So they head inside. And of course, Norm comes running over as they're heading in. And both the cop and Roger, like, leave. He's like, but I'm the one that called. Roger shows the one cop to the bathroom and offers the other some coffee. Norm pokes his head and he's like, coffee'd be great.
Because Creighton Duke almost goes into the cubbyhole. Like, you think the cubbyhole is the bathroom? And he's like, no, 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 that's not it.
He's like, I thought people kept toilets under the stairs.
And that's when he offers him coffee. And he's like, and Norm's like, coffee would be great, thanks.
And I'm like, man, people just love letting themselves into this house, don't they? We got the grocery boy, Sandy, Norm several times. And it continues. What's that?
No, never mind. I rethought what I was thinking, and I realized I was wrong.
Oh. So Roger very nervously gives the officer and Norm some coffee, drops a spoon on the floor, goes to pick
instant.
It up.
Instant.
Yes,
I hope you don't mind.
I hate instant coffee.
That was a big thing in the 80s.
It really was. It kind of still is, depending on where you are. Like, I know.
Oh, my God.
Always has instant. Ugh.
In Europe, coffee is not big like it is in America. Mm-hmm. And when people do drink coffee, it's always instant.
Oof.
Yeah.
No. Do not want.
When I went to Ireland.
Instant garbage.
The minute we touched down in New York City, I saw a Dunkin' Donuts. I've never been so happy to see a Dunkin' Donuts. Because it was 10 days of instant coffee.
Well,
to be fair, I mean, if I'm in Ireland, I'll drink Guinness, and that's pretty close to coffee.
I was there on a work trip as a chaperone.
Oh.
Yeah. I had one beer while I was there, because, you know, you have to have one beer. And my boss was like, it's okay to have one beer, because the person I was chaperoning had a beer too.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. But yeah, instant coffee, no thank you.
No, I can't stand that stuff. But he drops a spoon on the floor, goes to pick it up, and sees the two dropped shells. So he goes to grab them, and Norm says, oh no, I got it. And then Norm picks up the shells, and the cop's like, no, I got it. He takes the shells, asking Roger, I thought you said you were only cleaning the gun. And he goes, well, no sense in having a gun if you don't load it once in a while, right? And they all just kind of like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And I'm like, why did we make such a big deal about we showed him when he dropped the shells? Like, we made it seem like it was going to be a thing, and then he went to go pick them up, and the cop found him, and then it was just like nothing.
Yep.
It's so anticlimactic.
They wanted to scare you.
Right. It's like, this is one of those padding for time things.
But, oh, we'll get to more padding for time things in a few minutes.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So Roger goes to check on the other cop, who he finds staring at one of his aunt's paintings. This one is of a woman being chopped into sand by gardening tools. And he's like, oh, yeah, my aunt liked to paint. And he's like, I guess so. He's like, she was an artist. She's like, if you say so. Like, totally
dirty.
He was just dissing his aunt. But the cops and Norm head out. Roger notices his gun is missing and the cupboard is open. He hurries them out the door. Norm looks suspicious, but continues to go.
He doesn't Roger. Even lock the fucking door.
Yeah, he just closes it.
Like, you're whatever. Just asking for Norm to come back.
Maybe he wants to shoot Norm, too. Keep coming into my house, will you? But he heads back in and goes to check on the body under the stairs. Nothing. He gets a fire poker. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He gets fire poker, opens the door, and sees that the body is gone. He hears something upstairs, goes to investigate, sees his aunt's bedroom door. His aunt's bedroom door slams shut, opens the door, looks around, you know, nothing there, and he sees the closet door slam shut. So he starts heading over to the closet. As he's creeping up, where did Fatty McGee come from? Like, she was just standing behind him? Like, he didn't see her when he opened the door?
Apparently not.
Because the purple lady stands up with the shotgun.
Purple lady.
She's fucking purple. The purple nightmare.
The purple lady.
He goes
the to purple nurple.
I thought she was kind of sexy.
Oh boy, we got to get Maurice laid.
Ladies, he's single.
he's looking at.
Come on, that fake mask didn't win you over, or
was it the mask? Voice? The voice that did it for you?
Yeah, I think so.
But he goes to open the closet door, and she hits him in the head with the butt of the gun, knocking him to the floor. She mocks him in her chipmunk voice, saying, where's your son, Roger? You'll never find him. He's dead. And then she just starts laughing in that high-pitched voice. Roger looks up at her, saying, he's not dead, and he realizes he's somewhere in the house. And she levels the gun at him, saying, say your prayers. She clicks the trigger.
Take your vitamins.
Exactly. She clicks the trigger. The chamber is empty. Roger, he wastes no fucking time. He jumps up and beats her with a fire poker. I love it, because he just screams and starts whacking her with it. Runs out of the room. She whacks him with the gun and screams. Roger opens the bathroom door, letting the tools out. They fly into her, and then the shears come out, decapitating her. Roger cheers as her Halloween mask hits the floor.
Halloween mask falls off.
And this is where we cue you're no good while Roger cleans up the remains of the purple lady and goes to bury them in the backyard. So right as he's about to start digging, though, a woman calls out from his pool. It's the annoying neighbor, Tommy.
Oh, that fucking bitch.
Mm-hmm.
That body.
It's like, why does everyone just let themselves over?
Well, she said that the aunt let her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I but hope still. I can continue this now that you are here.
It's like,
what I do wonder,
you...
I wonder
if they... continue this now that you are here.
I wonder if the her or his aunt babysat for her too.
Yeah, maybe. Although she seemed like she didn't really care who watched her kids, so she might have just let him play in traffic.
That's true.
That's probably why she had to find a babysitter. The court was like, you got one more strike, lady.
Because where was her kid while she was swimming?
Maybe he was swimming, too.
He didn't come up for air.
School?
Neither did Jason. Maybe, yeah. I mean, Jimmy.
Jimmy.
But she gets out, you know, talks to him about how, like you said, his aunt let her swim there and hopes that she can continue. You know, she's like, I'm not imposing, am I? And he's like, oh, no. And she asks, what's under the plastic? And she goes, is it a sapling? He's like, yeah, it's an apricot tree. As the fucking arm of the purple monster, like, the purple reaches lady. Out. Yeah, the purple. She tries to grab Roger's boot. He just starts kicking at her.
And then it tries to grab fucking Tanya's foot. He should have let the purple lady have her.
Right.
The world would have been a better place.
And that's the thing, he just kind of shoves her away from the bag. And he's like, this really isn't a good time. And she asks him if he's there with his wife and blah, blah, blah. He tells her that he's divorced. And she's like, oh. She's like, well, we should get together, lady, later. And
Roger thinks, like, that she wants his cob.
Exactly. Because she goes, I can tell when a man wants to work, but I can also tell when a man wants to play. So it's like, yeah, she's hinting at stuff.
Also, and, 80s bathing suits for women, fucking hideous. The cut, like, the legs cut up to your tummy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so, the leg openings were so big that it only hid the slit of your hoo-ha. And then, like, it barely hid your butt crack.
Yep.
Like, it really, it left nothing. It was disgusting. That's all I got to say about that.
Speak for yourself.
They were just fucking ridiculous.
I no comment. but so that she starts to leave, and Roger just starts beating the shit out of the bag.
And she turns around to wave, and he, like, stops with the shovel in midair and waves goodbye to her.
Right. then he yanks out the axe from the body, and his giggle is fantastic. Because after he beat her with the shovel, he reaches under, pulls the axe out, and just goes, it cuts to all these, like, freshly covered holes in his backyard.
Yep.
Like, he just hacked her up and buried her everywhere. So,
which is gonna come back to bite him in the ass.
This literally is
true. Yes.
So Roger goes inside and passes out. That night he checks all around the house looking for his son or possibly any more spooktacular activity. And he's out by the pool and hears something. Turns around and sees a dog in his yard with the severed hand of the purple lady in his mouth. I love it. It's the hand is still twitching. He tries to get the dog to stay, but the dog takes off running, goes off after it. Dog's too fast for him, goes to get in his car, realizes he doesn't have his keys, runs inside to get the car keys, and then hears a knock on the door. He answers the door, and there's Tanya all dialed up, asking him, are you ready to play? He smiles and looks down and sees a toddler holding her hand. She goes, this is my son Robert, and he loves to play.
Will you watch Dirty. My mullet? My mullet bowl cut fuck trophy for me.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Oh my god, that kid. Have you ever seen the meme of the kid with that same haircut, but he kind of has the Steve Buscemi eyes? That's what this kid looks like.
He so does.
But and that's when he's like, she doesn't want my cob. She wants me to watch her
cob.
She wants me to She wants me to watch her little corn cob pipe while she goes goes and plays with some other cob.
Exactly. So he tries, dirty. He tries to tell her this isn't a good time. And suddenly Robert just takes off and Roger sees that the purple lady's hand is crawling up his back. So he tells Tanya to wait there and he'll go after the kid. He grabs Robert and tries to pry the hand off of his back, but it's digging its claws in. Tanya comes looking for them. Robert starts crying and Roger takes him in the bathroom.
Which now, Tanya has no fucking problem with.
Thank you. I'm like, this, yeah, this doesn't seem suspect at all. I was like, he ends up biting the hand to, like, force it to let go of Robert, and he drops it in the toilet and flushes it, which, I'm sorry, that would not have flushed, but whatever. So the hand go down the hole.
Like, fuck trophy, still crying.
Right. And then Roger comes out, and he's like, you know, he goes
he's
out,
like, he's, oh, he just had to go to the bathroom. He peed it all out.
Right. And I'm like, she has no problem with this man she just met helping her small child in the bathroom.
No, like, she's trying to get laid.
Oh, as a parent, this set every alarm off that I have. I'm like, nope, none of this.
I'm not even a parent, and I think that she's the worst fucking mother ever. Someone calls CPS on her ass.
Right. Oh, that drives me nuts that this is even in here like this. But she basically tells Roger that she needs him to babysit for her. It completely ignores his protests. She then drops all of his clothes, toiletries, and toys on Roger. And is like, okay, I'll be back later tonight. Bye! I was like, fucking horrible bitch. Mother. And this is where I have a note that says, I bet Susie will call her a fucking bitch.
Oh, she is such a fucking bitch.
But I, being that I mentioned any kind of 80s toy in these movies, I have to mention that Robert is playing with Buzz Off from Masters of the Universe, and Robert is playing with it and hits Roger in the face and goes, Buzz Off, Buzz Off. So we see Roger trying to write while watching his wife's soap opera. Robert begins crying on the floor while playing with his Masters of the Universe toys. And Roger tries to calm him down, but he wants his mom. He's like, I don't want the stranger that I just met. Oh, so
you
terrible.
Think he'd be used to it by now.
Right. Well, then Roger goes, you want something else to play with? And Robert nods yes. And he goes, how about a nice plastic bag? And I'm like, Jesus, like, this lady did not check on this at all.
She doesn't care. Also, man is giving her toddler a bath.
Oh, yep. That's another part that gets to me.
Like,
oh, simpler times.
I don't care, simpler times or not. That's not no, okay.
That was weird.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I can definitely say my mom would have not just dropped me off at the neighbors. Like, I know that for a fact. So Roger sits Robert down to watch some TV. Robert watches about 10 seconds of the boring soap opera and looks ready for a nap. So Roger tucks him in and Robert falls asleep. Roger turns off the TV and goes back to writing. So back to the Vietnam story, we see Big Ben and Roger walking through the jungle. Roger tries to tell Ben that we need to slow down. We've lost the rest of the squad and are running the risk of getting hit with friendly fire. Ben seems completely unfazed by this and just plows ahead, saying magic time. He stands up in the clearing, looks around. Roger warns him to get down. Ben tells him, shut up, I know what I'm doing. Suddenly, one of the Viet Cong shoots the fuck out of Ben. Roger is jolted back to reality, rubs his eyes, stands up from his desk, and looks around. He goes to check on Robert, who is now gone. So, dun dun dun. Goes looking for Robert upstairs and sees something that still to this day fucks me up. Like, legitimately, the hairs on the back of my neck are standing up right now thinking about it. Oh my God, this creeps me out so bad. The little fucking, I don't know what you call them, like chimney kids, gremlins, goblins, I don't know.
Chimney kids, I like that. The chimney kids steal the mullet. It's like capture the flag.
Oh my God, they're so fucking creepy though. But we see Robert is being led into a room at the end of the hall by these fucking, they look like demonic Garbage Pail kids. Like, I don't like anything about him. But
no, thank you.
Right. I'm like legit getting creeped out right now. Like, I hate these things. And Roger goes running down there. He busts open the door and sees Robert gets like sucked up into the fireplace chimney. He runs over, grabs Robert's feet and tries to yank him back down. And there's a struggle between Roger and the creatures trying to yank the kid up the chimney. But Roger wins the tug of war and pulls Robert to safety. We then cut to Roger giving Robert a bath like absolutely nothing just happened. Like, just watching this as a child scarred me for life. I imagined the kid would be pretty fucking scarred.
He's too young to remember.
He's a goldfish?
When he tells his mom, she'll just be like, oh, he's a writer. He's a nice man. He took you to the potty.
Oh, but yeah, this kid's going to be in therapy for life. But yeah, so he gives kid a bath.
He's going to keep living with his mother and need a babysitter.
Right. So then we cut to Tanya picking her kid up. And I'm like, once again, fucking horrible mother.
Oh, my God. I just thought of something.
What's that?
There's another movie you have to watch. It's called The Baby.
The Baby?
It's a horror movie about what you think it is. About a grown baby. Like,
oh, God.
Yeah. That's going to be the crotch goblin.
I will add this to the list.
Yep.
So, yeah, she comes and picks up her kid. And now we cut to just before midnight. Roger is watching the clock. Norm comes over with some beers, thinking they're going to watch a movie. Roger brings...
He's like, I didn't ask you over to watch a movie and cuddle with me.
He's like, I hope I didn't miss the beginning. He's like, I'm not here to cuddle with you, Norm. He's like, oh, shit. But he tells him about, you know, the whole ghost thing. He's like, you remember how I thought I saw a ghost the other day? Well, I must have been hysterical because it was actually a raccoon. A really big raccoon. One the size of a St. Bernard. And Norm's like, Cujo, the raccoon. He tells Norm that he has it trapped in the closet right now. So he gives Norm the harpoon gun and tells him that he wants him to shoot the giant raccoon, explaining that he has a line attached to the gun in case it tries to escape. He says it keeps going out through the roof and it has a nest in the closet. He goes, I want to try to keep it here so we can kill it. Norm is just like going along with this, like, okay. And Roger gets ready by the closet door, saying, I'll open the door right at midnight, so we time it just right. He's got a mattress to protect him and a fire poker.
And he's like, and by the way, don't fire that until I move.
Yeah, because he's like, I almost got shot once with that fucking thing. Let's not have a repeat. But the clock chimes midnight, Roger opens the door, and the creature from before rushes out. Roger starts beating it with a fire poker while Norm just screams. Roger yells at him to shoot it. Norm does, and the thing rushes back into the closet. The line wraps around Roger's foot and yanks him into the closet, too. Roger screams for Norm to grab him. He grabs him, telling him that he'll hold on. He'll hold on if it's the last thing he does. And Norm loses his grip, and Roger's gone.
Yep.
So we see Roger getting dragged through the jungle by the creature. Norm grabs a fishing rod attached to the line and tries to save Roger. The line pulls off the rod and disappears into the closet, and Norm is just left there looking at it like, ah, nuts. But we find out that
he does locate the Jack Daniels, so.
This is true. That's what's most important.
Yeah.
And he makes a bed for himself on the mattress shield.
Yep. He's keeping watch for his friend to come back. He's very optimistic that the closet monster, that giant raccoon is going to let him go.
And that it's not going to come back and finish him off.
Right.
Like, if I saw that, I would not be sleeping in that house. No, sir. Oh, man.
Well, let's be honest. If he's coming over at midnight to watch a movie and brings beer, he's probably already in the bag.
This is true. This is true. This is where Roger finds himself in a jungle with a shot up corpse, or not a corpse, I'm sorry, shot up Big Ben.
We don't mean that he shot up drugs.
No, he's riddled with bullet holes. He's dying and begs Roger to finish him off. He's like, kill me before they find me. Roger can't do it. He promises to go and get help and begins to leave. The Viet Cong show up and drag Ben away. He screams, "I'll get you for this, Roger. I swear I will.
I'll get you, my pretty. If it's the last thing I do."
Oh, God. I know you guys haven't watched part three, but the villain in part three has this cackle that whoever was in charge of that sound effect was really in love with it, because it plays like every 3 seconds throughout the entire climax. It's, oh my God, it was so annoying. Like, I was getting to the point where I wanted to start fast forwarding because I couldn't take that fucking cackle anymore. But Roger sees the portal home, runs, jumps through it, right as the Viet Cong jump up and start shooting at him. So he finds himself back in the bedroom with a sleeping Norm who is holding a bottle of Jack Daniels and a fire poker. He wakes Norm up, who tries to attack him with the poker. He sees Roger and excitedly hugs him. We see that the whiskey bottle is half empty. And so drunk Norm is drunk. And Roger helps Norm to bed, and he goes to lay down himself. He then remembers his aunt's painting in the closet, with the portal, and runs off to the shed to look at it. He pulls the paint rag off of it and reveals his screaming son in the mirror of the medicine cabinet. So, Roger...
Now shit gets even weirder.
Yes. Uh-huh. And this is what I was saying about this movie. Like, it doesn't waste time. It's just... Every couple of seconds, something weird's happening. So Roger bolts upstairs, runs to the bathroom, looks in the mirror, opens the cabinet, sees it's just a normal medicine cabinet, closes it again, looks at it, grabs a stool, and throws it through the mirror, and it shatters, revealing a black void beyond. He throws a can of shaving cream in and hears nothing. He then checks the wall outside, like he opens the bathroom window, looks outside, slaps the wall of the house, like, huh, nothing. What do you make of that?
He wanted to see if, like, the outside... I don't know why he did that. That was fucking dumb.
I was cracking up. He then looks into the void, and a tentacle grabs him by the arm and tries to yank him in. Then monster hands start grabbing and pawing at him. Roger grabs a straight razor and slashes at the creatures, causing them to let go. He then hears his son screaming in the void. And this was kind of a cool shot, because he looks in and sees nothing, and then we kind of see the reverse shot from, like, inside the void looking at Roger, and It's just this little tiny window of light with Roger staring into it. So we cut to Roger tying a rope around the toilet and climbing into the void with his shotgun and flashlight. He slides down the rope, and suddenly we get a skeleton bat jump scare. I used to love this thing. This is the one part of the movie I thought looked cool as a kid.
See, I think it looks cool, but it definitely has not aged well.
Oh no, it's bad stop motion.
Yeah,
it's really bad stop motion.
Like the California raisins.
Yeah, but the design of, like, it was like a human skeleton, like a rib cage and part of a spinal column, and the arms and a skull, but with fangs for the teeth, and then like giant bat wings. Like, I thought that was so cool looking. I wanted a toy of that when I was a kid. But it scares him, then flies away, kind of circles around, and Roger's looking into the nothingness, you know, trying to find it. It then flies back and steals his gun, spins it around on its finger, and shoots the rope, dropping Roger down into water below. So he splashes into the water, looks around, sees air bubbles, and immediately thinks, oh, that must be Jimmy. Like, he's been holding his breath all these years.
I don't know why I think that's so funny.
I just want to know why he immediately was like, Jimmy! Oh my God.
He crewgills and breathes like a fish.
But so he goes underwater to investigate, and when he resurfaces, this time he's in the jungle. He swims to shore and finds his son in a bamboo cage.
This is so funny too, because he looks so dirty and like malnourished until they get back to the real world,
right? And then he's totally fine.
He's like, he looks like he's like zestfully clean.
It was that ghost water. That's what cleaned him. Ghost water.
Oh, my tummy hurts from laughing.
So he gets over to the cage and like he tries to, you know, open it up. And Jimmy's telling him, I want to go home. And then says, he's coming back. Roger looks around, begins unlocking the cage, and gunfire starts riddling the trees behind him. Roger gets Jimmy out. They run for the water as a silhouetted figure shoots at them. They dive in the water, surface in the pool in the backyard. We get happy music and this short-lived celebration as Roger hugs his son and kind of tosses him in the air. Like, wee! This, like, 12-year-old boy, he's just hugging him in the air. Oh, man.
He's so happy. He wants to go back in the house and call the FBI and the CIA to talk to Agent Decker and tell him the good news. Guess what I found?
He was in the pool all along.
I told you.
Oh, my God. So he goes inside and goes to the front door like, okay, you were outside. Why didn't you just walk? If you were going to leave, why didn't you just walk from the backyard to the front yard? But no, he goes through the house to the front door, opens it up, and we reveal zombie Big Ben, who just goes, sucker!
Yep.
Roger realizes that Ben is the one that did this. He took Jimmy. Ben tells him, you should have finished me off, Roger. They tortured me for weeks. And he goes, I would have died for you, Ben. And he goes, well, now's your chance. That line cracked me up. So Roger slams the door, tells Jimmy to run. Ben shoots holes in the door. And I love it because he just peeks in and goes, you're really pissing me off, Raj. And this is where I was like, okay, his makeup is something I've always loved, but it did not hold up to modern resolution. Because, like, it was Kurt Wilmot. That's his name. I wrote his name here. You can see Kurt Wilmot's mouth inside the zombie mouth. And, like, you can see some of the seams and, like, where the makeup, where basically he has, like, black underneath the makeup to make it look like holes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very visible, but it's still a cool getup. I love the design. But Roger runs and Ben breaks in through a window. Roger picks up a chair and breaks it over Ben. And he's like, you hit like a little girl. And then Roger runs upstairs. Ben follows him. So Roger runs into the bathroom. The portal to the other side is now gone. Ben shoots the lock off the door and conveniently runs out of ammo right there. And he's like, ah, come back from the dead and run out of ammo. Like, there's like weird quips throughout this entire thing.
The one-liners that he has are really great.
Yeah. So Roger climbs out of that little tiny bathroom window and climbs up onto the roof.
Why Ben bitches always climbing up on the roof? Why, right? Why are they not climbing down?
Well, it was a pretty long drop.
He could have done it.
As a kid, this scene scared me because the way Ben like almost grabs his foot and yanks him down.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that freaked me out as a kid. But he climbs up on the roof, makes his way across over to the attic window, and gets back into the house. So Ben tries to grab him. He runs back through the house, and then Ben jumps out and tries to grab him. Roger runs, falls down the stairs to the landing. Ben slowly walks down the landing, picks him up, and throws him down the rest of the stairs. And Ben tells him, you'll never get rid of me, Roger. And then this is where Roger just snaps. He rushes Ben and starts attacking him, rips his arm off, and uses it as a club to beat him with.
Yep.
And then Ben just shoves Roger, grabs his arm, and puts it back on. Like, what the fuck are you doing? So Roger goes to run into the kitchen, but the doors now open onto a cliff over jagged rocks and water. Roger falls and grabs onto the edge. Ben comes out and says, you lost, buddy, and then he begins stomping on his fingers. Roger takes his belt off and uses it as a lasso to grab Ben's hand and yank him off, throwing him to the rocks below where his head pops off.
I think of that song that I used to sing when, you know, like when I was a kid, we would sit in the yard and pick dandelions.
Mm-hmm.
Mama had a baby and its head popped off. And we'd like flick the flower off into the
yep.
air.
We used to do that too. I think that was like an 80s kid thing.
Yep.
But so, and I was like, okay, Roger slowly pulls himself back up from the ledge, like, and he was hanging by one hand, like arms fully extended. I'm like, I would have died here. I do not have the upper body strength to yank myself. Well,
we were not numb, so that's why.
But still. So Roger then, he climbs back up, looks behind him, and the kitchen is now there. The cliff is completely gone. He hears Jimmy calling out for him, goes to find his son. He finds Ben holding Jimmy, like holding him up by his shirt. like a cat being held by the scruff of the neck. He tells Roger, you had your chance to kill me, and now I'm going to kill you. Now I'm going to kill your son unless you kill yourself. That's what it was. And Roger reaches for Jimmy, and Ben just chops his hand off. Roger looks down and realizes his hand is just fine. He realizes that if he's not afraid, the house and Ben can't hurt him. I wrote, Nightmare on Elm Street called, they want their ending back. Because that is the exact ending to Nightmare on Elm Street. You know, it's like, come on. And Nightmare on Elm Street was a huge hit like the year before. It's like, okay, guys. But Roger tells Ben he's no longer afraid. Ben panics. He's like, I'm warning you, you're pissing me off. And Roger's like, oh yeah, what are you going to do? Takes his knife from him. He goes, I'm warning you, Roger. Takes his son back. While Ben is stammering, Roger takes a grenade off of Ben's belt and takes the pin out, shoves it up into Ben's guts, and runs out of the room with Jimmy. So Ben explodes, the door blows off the hinges, the house catches on fire. And just then, this is where Sandy pulls up in the taxi, sees
and
the house.
And oh my God, she's alive.
Right. And we see the house just on fire. Norm comes running out. Roger and Jimmy walk out of the house on fire. Like the whole house is on fire. And they walk out. Sandy runs to her son. Happy music plays. We get a freeze frame of Roger smiling like he's in a fucking Mentos commercial. And the credits roll.
Yep. Because fresh goes better with Mentos fresh and full of life.
That ending is just like, okay, like that seemed a little rushed, but whatever. I mean, overall, I still have a blast watching it. Oh, yeah. It's pure nostalgic fun for me. Is it a good movie? No. It's really not. Is it a fun movie? Abso-fucking-lutely. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I definitely recommend this, especially for this time of year. You know, when you want to watch just dumb popcorn horror. Like, this is a great one to revisit. But, originally, this was written by Fred Decker, the same guy who did Monster Squad and Night of the Creeps and all that. Hmm. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But then it was rewritten by Ethan Wiley. And I guess Decker was kind of pissed off because he didn't have any humor, which I kind of find hard to believe. Because I'm like, looking at his stuff, Decker does more comedic horror. But according to the trivia, they were saying that he was kind of annoyed because he wrote it to be a more serious horror movie. And then they injected a lot of humor into it in the rewrites. So I was like, well, okay. I call possible IMDb shenanigans. But in Hong Kong, this movie was known as Don't Go Into the Haunted House After Midnight.
That's a long title.
It really is. But they also, there was that, was it Japanese? I can't remember where it's from now, but there is a Asian horror movie called House that is fucking batshit crazy. I like, oh my God, if we ever get to Asian horror, that's one of those ones we got to put on the list. Cause it's hilarious in how strange it is. Highly recommend it. If you guys haven't seen it, all of the creatures in this were manufactured over a period of 3 months. So that's pretty fucking quick, especially for 80s effects. Like, I know a lot of times they had quite a bit of lead-in time with the special effects-heavy movies. And last bit of trivia that I wrote down here was that the for sale sign at the beginning of the movie was Craven Realty.
Yep, so, nod to Wes Craven.
Yeah, thought that was kind of funny. Oh, and one thing. Now, okay, I read this. I don't know if you guys checked this out, but the monster in the closet was supposed to be a bunch of soldiers napalmed together. So, like, you're supposed to be a bunch of melted people. And its fingers were supposed to be bullets. Now, I tried to freeze frame it a couple of times, and it does have weird faces all over its body. I couldn't get a good look at its fingers, though. So I don't know if they really were bullets, or it was, but it was really hard to see. So it's supposed to be like, what's that?
Enhance. Enhance. Enhance.
You've been watching too much NCIS. But overall, fantastic movie. I don't know. Do you guys have anything you want to add at the end here?
No, it's just a fun movie. If you haven't watched it, you definitely should. It's free on Amazon Prime.
Yeah. And the sequel is on Tubi, so you can watch it for free. But I highly recommend to you guys to watch the sequels if you get bored, because they're just batshit.
Destination House 2, Tubi, 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 Tubi.
What she said. But, well, I guess for those of you not following us, we should mention our social media, which is The Boogeyman's Closet on both Facebook and Instagram. Maurice handles our Twitter, and what is that, good sir?
At Boogeyman's The.
Thank you very much. We're still doing our giveaways. By the time you hear this, the September giveaway will have been, the winner will be chosen for that. I don't know if I'll have the October one up yet when this goes live, but if it's not up, it will be up within a few days, and we have two. So there will be two very large prize packages for this month, because it is October. We have to go big. So there'll be two different things you could try to win. So check that out on the social media. And we also have a Patreon if you guys are interested. It's $3 a month for all of our audio content, which includes all of these regular episodes completely unedited, as well as a special episode every month just for Patreon listeners. But our next episode, we'll be continuing our haunted house movies with Hellfest. It'll be episode 114. Now, this is, we have two haunted attraction movies and two haunted house movies. So this will be one of our haunted attraction movies. And man, I can't wait to cover it. I know me and Maurice have brought up multiple times on this show how much we liked it when we saw it in the theater. And it's become one of my Halloween staples since it came out. It's just, it's a fun slasher movie. So really looking forward to covering that. But all right, guys, I think that's about it. So as always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.